talk a little bit about this really fascinating Yusugya
of Losa Guru Phage.
So there are a couple of points we need to try to understand about this issue, and about, just as important, how does it fit in with our sukhas recently? Is there a reason that's more than tangential why this Gemara appears where it does? And what exactly is the thrust of the Yisur of Losa Guru Bafnei? So to start with, what does it mean? What is the Torah telling us when it says Losa Guru Bafnei? How are you?
Don't fear any man.
Okay, so you're saying that the general intention is don't be afraid. And don't be afraid in what sense? If somebody comes with a knife to kill you, don't be afraid?
Well, I guess the context of the pasuk is bad.
Okay.
Perhaps it's referring to a judge.
Okay. So the judge shouldn't be afraid of what?
Litigants who might be powerful or annoying or things like that.
Okay, it's definitely a start. So I think what will emerge a little bit from our sugya is that there's what to figure out about just what exactly is the focus of this issur. So how does our Gemara present it? What does our Gemara tell us is the application of Losa Guru Bafnei? Anyone, what's the Gemara give us as practice? Maury?
If one of the litigants is a tough guy, and you decide to hear his, and you eventually do hear his piece enough to understand which way the din is probably going to go, so you should still judge the piece and not be afraid of the tough guy.
Okay, so there's a couple of words to pick up on what you said, right? So one thing that's interesting is, we'll have to get to this later, but tough guy or tough guy, does it make a difference? So how might it make a difference?
If they're tough guys, then they can balance each other out.
Right, which is kind of a funny idea. This is definitely one of the more adventurous professions, if that's what you're relying on. But that's something that we find in Shulchan Aruch we'll have to come back to. Right? That tough guys might be a very different story than tough guy. But in addition to that, there's a very significant qualifier in our Gemara. Right, what's that qualifier? Yes?
Only if you've already heard enough to kind of either maybe know where it's going, or maybe you've heard enough, I guess.
Okay, so that's itself pretty interesting, right? And is that the only din the Gemara mentions in this context? Is there another din, possibly? Tamir?
I mentioned the din if one's rabbi or teacher is judging the case, if he sees that he messed up, so he can't be quiet, he has to speak up and say the correct.
All right, that's quite a translation. He sees that he messed up, but he has to, all right, that's what it has to be. But he sees he has what to say, right? So he shouldn't hold back. So here, that's itself an interesting question to keep in mind. Okay, so far we've seen that we have two din, which seems to emerge from this pasuk, that the dayan should not hide from the case itself, and that the student should not hold back from speaking to the dayan when he has what to say. And we have this very interesting qualifier of things change when the din is already beginning to clarify. You know, you already have a sense of where things are going, that's when at least one of these rules kicks in. So would you say that this din of the dayan not hiding and of the student not holding back, are those two different drushes? Is that two different applications? What do you think about that? How do you interpret that? Is that machlokas in the Gemara? Yes, Tamir?
I think you can combine the two.
Okay, go for it.
Both of them are speaking of pretty much not withholding whatever information you may know. In the case of her, is in the case of the dying, you can't withhold judging the case if you have no information about it except for a qualifier. If he knows where the thing's going, except he can no longer not judge the case because he has what to say.
That's already very interesting. Okay, you're jumping to answer another question. That's a fascinating thought. That's very good.
Okay, same thing with the...
No, that is very good. I mean, that's not the only way to see things. But it's interesting. You see what Tamir just said? That one question you could ask is, we know that normally we assume that a drasha comes to tell us one thing or the other. In our Gemara, it sounds like it's even my focus. Right, first, we have a statement about Dayanim. And then we have another statement, which seems to be coming to tell you something else. Shuv and Karach Omer, Minayin L'Tamla Shiyosh, Tnei Rabo, V'Roz Chosli Odi, V'Chav L'Asher, Minayin Shalo Yishtok, Shinemar Lo Suguru Pnei Ish. Rav Chanin Omer Lo Sachnis Dovarcha, Mipnei Dvarecha, Mipnei Ish. So, you could say that that's a whole separate limud. Right, that's coming to teach you a different thing. So, what exactly is the bottom line here? The bottom line seems to be that they're both true. Right? They're both brought by halacha. So, if they're both brought by halacha, what does that mean about how to interpret the pasuk? So, you could interpret this pasuk and keep this question in mind because it's going to show up again probably sometime tomorrow for some very interesting synergy points. So keep this question in mind, what I'm about to say. That there's a concept called Olav Shebeklolos. Are you familiar with this idea? Right, that we know that if you commit Olav to the Torah, so you're Chayav Malkus, and that's true for every single Olav, without exception, with many, many exceptions. So there are entire categories of exceptions, such as Lav Shein Bo Maisa, right? You familiar with this idea? We talked about this a little bit regarding Chametz and Valuel Bayimatze. And that if you have, this actually comes up in a few contexts of Pesach relevance, but if you have a Lav that doesn't involve any action, so you're not Chayav Malkus. If you have a Lav that can be fixed, you're not Chayav Malkus. So one of them is a Lav Shebeklolos, which sounds like it means, at least according to some Rishonim, that you have a Lav in the Torah, and this prohibition yields many different Yisurim. So one Pasuk, one phrase in the Torah, gives us a number of Yisurim. That's called the Lav Shebeklolos. So is that what we have here? So we have also Guru B'Fnei Ish. So does that mean, on the one hand, a dayan should not refuse to take the case? And on the second hand, that a talmud should not hold back? Two separate yisurim learned from the same pasuk, a lav should be closed. And again, please remember that definition, because I think we're going to come back to it tomorrow. Morty?
Do you talk about lav should be closed? Do you assume that there is underlying similarity between them, the fact that both of them just being learned out, happen to be learned out from the same lab?
So not necessarily. It's a fair question. Let's assume for the sake of this question right now that not. That they're two separate concepts which could just be tied to the same words in the Torah. Because we want to contrast it with the other possibility, which is to say that maybe it's all the same idea. And these are just different applications of the same idea. It's not a lav shebeklolos. Right? So the Torah says, don't eat basa b'chalav. So we know it means don't eat basa b'chalav at McDonald's, and don't eat basa b'chalav at Burger King, and don't eat it at Wendy's. So that's not a lav shebeklolos. These are all just different ways to do the same issue. So Tamir suggests very nicely that we could say that they all share a very specific core, that maybe what it means is that you... The context, I asked you before, what does Losuk of Neish mean? That if somebody comes at you with a knife, so you're not supposed to be scared of him? No. it's talking in the context of Dayana. So clearly, the way it's presented in the Torah, it's got something to do with Din. So says Tamir, maybe it means that when you can make a definitive contribution to the resolution of the Din, you can't hold back. So therefore, the Talmud who knows he's got something to say, it's not just random, but he knows that he has a crucial svara, can't hold back. And the Dayan who knows how things should be resolved. So he suggests very nicely to me that that's why we have this strange distinction that when you know where things are leaning, that's when this issue applies. But until then, it's just a potential that you might be able to help. So then that's not going to necessarily put a fee of money. Now that's important to clarify. So let's say if you want to define it so precisely, that basically it means this exact situation, that when you could make a difference in resolving din, you're obligated to do it. So let's also consider what other values might be present here. And what other mitzvot in the Torah might contribute to the whole picture of an obligation, of a mitzvah, of some other imperative here. All right?
Peace and truth.
Okay, well, let's say psukim in the Torah. You can think of at least two. At least two other psukim that might play a role in contributing to the responsibility or the potential responsibility in this situation.
Midbar Sheker
Tirchak. Okay, Midbar Sheker Tirchak. Right? And how does it contribute there?
The din is going to be a lie. It's not going to be correct. So you want to make sure that it's not incorrect, so you have to step in and fix it.
Okay, so now to say that, which you may have seen if you got through the Naf of the Marmar Komos, there's the Gemara that supports that, and the Gemara that actually poses a question to our Gemara, because the Gemara Masechta Shavuos and Daf Lamed Aleph has the same din, that a Talmud should not sit back, and it brings it from Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So that's interesting, and that presents a question a little bit, why our Gemara has a different pasuk for it. And Tosfos has the question over there in Shavuos, if you saw it, with not a very satisfying answer. Right? That was like the answer not so often. What was Tosfos' answer?
That's what Gemara does.
It happens a lot. Yeah, this is something we find a lot of places. There's what to say about that Tosfos, but we'll come back to it. But it highlights the fact that whether it's a problem for our Gemara or not, the Gemara elsewhere has this din from Midvar Sheker Tirchak. So, using Midvar Sheker Tirchak here, this is just interesting and a little bit for synergy points, because I think in Chumash here this year we spoke about Midvar Sheker Tirchak, right? So, applying Midvar Sheker Tirchak to this case allows for at least two insights about the nature of Midvar Sheker Tirchak. You want to comment on that? Yes?
You can't passively allow...
Oh, okay, so that's the more significant then. So hold on to that one for a second, but you're right. But the other one is just, there's a whole discussion, which I think we mentioned, whether Midvar Sheker Tirchak is something that is applicable as an isser in all falsehoods in everyday life, or is it specifically relevant to Bezdin. And the Gemara, specifically that Gemara over there in Shavuos, which has a number of drashos on this pasuk, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, all of them in the context of Beis Din, support the idea that it's specifically a Beis Din idea. But Midvar Sheker Tirchak, even though we encourage honesty all the time, it's definitely the best policy for a lot of reasons, but specifically in the Beis Din context, that's where the issue seems to manifest itself. But now let's get to Aryeh's point. So the other interesting insight you can get from here is that Tirchak, we've noted, is a surprising language, because normally if the Torah wants to prohibit something,
there's all kinds of words the Torah can use to prohibit something, and Terephach doesn't seem to be one of them.
So perhaps
the message is it's not simply an Isser to lie. If that were the case, you could satisfy it by not lying. But it sounds like it's much broader. It sounds like if you do anything that contributes to a falsehood taking place, especially in a Beis Din context, that that's included in the Isser. And as we're seeing here, even if you passively allow it to happen, as Arya was about to say, and I actively cut him off, right, that even if you passively allow Sheker to hit its mark, because you could have stopped it and you didn't, that's also going to be a problem. We've mentioned throughout the year also how Midvar Sheker Terchak also has a connection to Kabbalah Lashon Hara, right, that's also a part of it, that you're not supposed to allow someone to get away with telling you false, disparaging things. So Terephach seems to be very broad. So here we can see it also, that if you could contribute to the MS, so then that's something you have to do. So I think this provokes a lot of questions. Because we see now two values which are intertwined in the story. And intertwined to such a degree that we're not even sure which one is the source of the specific good that we're talking about. So we see that there is this Isser Lo Saguru of Zayish, which maybe is specifically din-oriented, and telling us that we can't stand by and let din come out the wrong way, when which becomes an absolute machayev, specifically when you are directly connected to the conclusion and you know what the resolution should be. And we see also that there is an imperative of Midvar Sheker Terchak, which may also cover some of the same territory, essentially, at least as far as related to this point. And if you look in the Rambam, how do things come out? The Rambam is long, but if you look at the Rambam at the beginning of Parak of Dal and Hilchos Sanhedrin, so you see that if you want to get a conclusion about whether the Rambam paskins like one drush or the second drush, or Hira Lo Saguru, so it's a little bit complicated, right? Because the Rambam brings both dinim, but the second din, he also invokes Lo Saguru Bifnei Yish. He also invokes Midvar Sheker Terchak. So, giving you a little bit of room to wonder what exactly is the basis. Right, so if you want to look at the together, did I just say Chav Dalet? I meant to say Chav Beis.
Yeah.
Right, I think you should take that back. That we should have been Lo Saguru Bifnei Yish. Right, so you're supposed
still
to
looking.
Yeah, yeah, that was all to see. It was all a test. You know, this is Torah in action here, right? So you see, the beginning of Chav Beis, if we'll look at it together quickly, so the language of the Rambam is, Shnayim Shabbatal Fanech Ladin, Echad Rach V'Echad Kasha, Ad Shal Tishmas Devrayim, Oh, Misha Tishmas Devrayim, V'yate Yedel Hechem Adin Noita, Atta Mishai Lomer Lahem, Eini Nizkok Lechem, Shami Yischayif HaKasha, Vimsa Roi Defach Radayim. Aval, Misha Tishmas Devrayim, Atei Yedel Hechem Adin Noita, Iyata Mishai Lomer, Eini Nizkok Lechem, Shenemar, Lo Sugur, Bifnei, Shal Tomer, Ish Ploni Rosh, Hu Shami Harag, Es Bani, Shami Yadlik, Es Gidishi, Shami Yikatsis, Nitiosi, Vim Hayim, Avul, Rabbi, Mechayim, Zakhbim. Okay, we'll have to talk about that separately. And Halacha Beis, it brings the next in, Lechein, Talmud, Shai Yoshof, Nei Rabbo, V'roz, Chus, La'ani, V'chov, La'ashrim, Shasak, Hayreza, Over, Mishum, Lo Saguru, Bipneish, V'alzeh, Ne'amar, Midvar, Sheker, Terchak. It's a little bit of a complicated mixture of the two Mekoros. So what exactly is he saying? This is what the Pasuk means, this is what Midvar, Sheker, Terchak means, this Midvar, Sheker, Terchak tells us what the Pasuk means. And then, just for good measure, he throws in another din here, also from that pasuk of Midvar Sheker Terchak. From Minayim L'Dayim Shlo Yoshev Talmud Bor Lefnei Talmud. I'm Lefnei, sorry, Lefanav, excuse me. Talmud Lomar Midvar Sheker Terchak. and that he shouldn't have an unqualified student there because of Midrash Sheker Tirchon. So that also just rounds out the picture of what Midrash Sheker Tirchon is telling. Okay, so now let's throw something else into the mix. Is there a third pasuk in the Torah that might be relevant to determining the responsibilities here? Any other din that might also contribute to the picture?
Yes? That last line there, I'm going to show that when the Gemara was talking about Midrash Sheker Tirchak, the Talmud, but really it's that the Talmud shouldn't allow the Rebbe to lie, meaning that's what both the Dinah would have in common. Right? The Rebbe shouldn't have a Talmud boiler father because that would possibly allow him to get away with some falsehoods, like inadvertently. And also, if the Talmud doesn't speak up and the Rebbe is making a mistake, so that's also a violation of Talmud Midrash Sheker Tirchak because it allows the Rebbe to make a lie.
That's interesting. It's a more specific interpretation. I could have thought that it could have been said broadly and maybe at the same point, but maybe you're right also, that you have a responsibility not to allow a false conclusion to emerge, and that that would mean making sure that the scenarios are in place for truth to come out. So that means you speak up when you see things aren't being properly addressed, and it means that you staff the panel with people who are qualified. Whether it goes to such a specific meaning to say that the Rebbe is going to lie unless you do this, especially because the second application seems like it's a mitzvah of the Rebbe, right? The Rebbe himself should not, but maybe that's still what it means. Maybe he has the chiyuv to be so honest that he has to create a check on himself by making sure not to just have passive listeners on the bezin. So it's all very interesting. So what's a third possible relevant pasuk here? There's definitely another one that could come up. It's one that's come up several times this year. Yes, really?
Yeah.
Close is the right word. Well, it's the same. You're definitely on the right track. I was thinking of a different pasuk, but you're definitely on the right track. Yes, David?
Some of the sources seem to say that you shouldn't be afraid of this guy and sort of bend the din towards him, so Rosh Safet sort of comes to mind.
Okay, that's also true. But the thing was more specific, Shmuley was closer. Why it's come up, what's from the very beginning of our Masechta throughout, right? There's a mitzvah that's relevant to our entire tractate. Bitzadek. Right, Bitzadek Tishbo, it's right that there is an obligation upon qualified people to adjudicate. By the way, that might be a logical clause, just because we're talking about that topic, because I think we've mentioned there are at least three interpretations of that pasuk. What that pasuk means, we're talking to people who could be dayanim and tell them that they should be when they can. Elsewhere, we find Chazal telling it refers to active dayanim, that they shouldn't have imbalanced attitudes towards the parties. And perhaps most famously, we associate it with the obligation of Dam Lechav Skos, which applies to all of us on a daily basis. So one could question whether that pasuk is a lapsh of a clause, which is an interesting discussion to have. But in any event, so maybe that's relevant here also. And you're definitely going to find we've shown who we're going to invoke this. That if you have a opportunity to make a difference, so then you have to. Right? So if there's a chiyuv on a dying to address the cases he's able to do, so very likely that's also possibly relevant. Okay, so very limited time do we have today. Let's round this picture out by throwing in a few more details into the mix. So first of all, what exactly are you afraid of? When the Torah tells you not to be afraid, so what is it that the dayan is afraid of? So it may be there's a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about this. Neither are extremely explicit about it. So I think there's some room to wonder about just how much the machlokas is a machlokas. But I think one could read the words differently, probably in both cases. But what potential possibilities do you see from Rashi and Tosfos in terms of what it is you're afraid of happening here? That's Tamir?
Either you could be afraid of a person, actually, beating you up.
Okay. Who says that?
Tosfos?
Right. It sounds like Tosfos says that. Tosfos basically says that leaves the Gemara to be interpreted as it sounds. So since the language of the Gemara is Nimsa Chazak Rodfo, that the strong guy is going to chase after somebody. So Tosfos says here, Perush Ladayim. Right, so you're afraid that the secular, the guy is going to run after you, the dying. So it sounds like it means he's going to hurt you. Rashi may understand it differently. What does Rashi say? Right, what's Rashi's language?
He'll run after you to try to get you to change the net. He'll annoy you.
Exactly, right. So many assume that there is a machlokas here between Rashi and Tosfos as to what exactly we're afraid of. Tosfos is saying you're afraid physically that he's going to hurt you. And Rashi is saying that you're afraid he's going to try to get you to change the din. I'm a little vague about this because I think it's possible to read either opinion differently. I mean, basically, you're afraid that this guy is going to go either or on you, right? He's going to basically act like a goslin and come with a gun and say, your money or your life. Right? So to here, he's going to say, change the din or I'll kill you. So if that's really what we're afraid of, it could just be they're emphasizing different words here, and that Rashi and Tosfos are essentially saying the same thing. By Rashi could mean, I think, that he's going to try to pressure you to change the din, and if you're not going to change the din, he's going to kill you. Yes, sir?
There's a problem with, I don't know, being afraid of being beaten up because there's a problem with Sekundus the Plush is there.
Oh.
So that should be a legitimate reason to be afraid.
Right, so
maybe
we'll
to change the din wouldn't be, but that you should hold on fast and know that you won't change the din.
Uh-huh.
On the other end, if somebody is threatening to kill you, that should be something to fear.
Alright, so that's something I was going to bring up, but let's bring it up now because you're bringing it up. So, what's going on here? Are we saying that this Isser applies, is it hard way outward? But what happens if you go up to Nefesh Dolchis HaKol? What do you think about that? Does this then apply in Malkum Sakhanas Nefeshals? What do you think? Any thoughts, Shmuley?
Maybe he's not certain that the guy is going to go after him. Maybe he's worried that the guy might go after him, and therefore it's not,
okay, so very good. So definitely our poskim will say it like that. So, just if I understand you correctly, what you're saying, the language, right, and the Rambam's language, which you got from Chazal, right, oh, maybe he's going to kill my son, Chas v'Shalom, right, maybe he's going to do this. So, does that mean that even Mamish Pikuach Nefesh, he's got to stand firm no matter what? So it could be like Shmuley is saying that no, that it's a far off concern. It's not really a practical concern, but out of a general vague fear, that's not enough. And some of them prove it by saying that after they mention this mortal fear of him going after his family, then it says Shema Yadlik is Kedishi, Shema Yiktos Tiosai, maybe he'll cut down my trees, maybe he'll set fire to my produce. And so that, is kind of a Kavah Chomer. And so if you're worried about him killing people, then for sure he's going to be willing to destroy your property. Why is that mentioned afterwards? So some suggest that maybe that's a proof that it's not a genuine fear in a specific nature on any of these things. You don't have any actualized threat or real feeling that he's going to do something specific. You're just speaking in generalities. Who knows what this guy is capable of? So that's not enough. But if it was Mamish, Sakhanas Nefashos, Shmuley is suggesting, then no, we wouldn't say that this is going to be true before a matter of actual life and death. Are you?
I was just thinking that in the case of Shimon Levi, mm-hmm. killing the town, so according to the Rama, perhaps, there is an obligation to have din. Mm-hmm. And if you're disturbing din by not willing to judge people because you're afraid of what they're going to do to you, so it's you're obligated. That's the problem with din on the judge's part. And so maybe there is a... The fact that the people did not judge
that one recalls, so Arya is referring to the Rambam's position that Shimon and Levi were justified in executing the city of Shem because they failed to try Shem the individual, they failed to adjudicate the matter, so therefore they were liable for the crime.
So maybe there is an aspect of Yari Vali Avor when it comes to that.
Interesting. You know, it's that's a very interesting comparison to make. You know, there the Rambam says it's because they failed to do the mitzvah of din, which specifically by Bnei Noach, he's assuming is part of the whole system where by all the mitzvahs of Bnei Noach are subject to a chiyuv mitzvah if you don't do them. It's hard to translate over here, but it's an interesting comparison. So there's also something very interesting if you think about this. So Shmuley just said in interpretation, which a number of poskim share, that we would not apply this din to Mokom Pikuach Nefesh Mamash. That the language that you find in the Rambam and other sources is more of a vague, generalized concern that doesn't actually connect to real Sakanas Nefashos. But there are others, for example, the Shuv of Zakan Aaron has a Shuv about this, it's with Aaron Walken, where he says, based on the Rambam, that this applies even the Makom Pikuach Nefesh. So, based on that, I apologize that it's pretty scheduled time, going to have to end soon, and we'll have to continue this tomorrow. So I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts. First of all, if this psak is true, why should it be? What happened to Indabra Ogun with Antikov now? What possible svara is there to say that this should be different? Offhand, does anything come to mind? But why should you say that this din should be true, even the makom pikuach nefesh? Yes, sir?
It seems that if there are people who are just able to say to the judges, we will kill you if you do not judge in our favor, it's a breakdown of din. You just have the mafia running the show.
Uh-huh.
So you have to have built into the system judges being willing to lay down their lives for the law.
Okay, so that's interesting. And just to, we haven't got up to this part of it yet, but just to fill in what you're saying, right? So we saw the Rambam, we'll have to speak about this point more tomorrow, but the Rambam says that there's a whole exception to this whole idea that you're allowed to back out at the beginning. And who is that? The Mamunah L'Rabbah, right? That if there's somebody who has, sounds like Mumcha L'Rabbah, Mamunah L'Rabbah is somebody who has the job of carrying out justice in this place, so then, if you're going to say he can back out too, so then, basically, you could theoretically have the Wild West. And if you have somebody who's already clearly given the job of taking care of justice, and you could say, well, I'm not going to deal with dangerous people, so then nobody's going to deal with dangerous people, and you have the Wild West. So maybe just for the basic safety of society, this is the kind of thing where we can't allow Sakanas Nefashos to scare us off. In a sense, you could compare it to Muhammad. Now we know, I think we mentioned this sometime this year also, in a different context, but if we say, like the Mechasninuch and others say, that by Mochama, we don't have a p'tur of Sakanas Nefashos, right? So we have a Mochama's mitzvah. So nobody can say, well, I'm going to sit this one out because I'm Jewish, and in Judaism we say, p'tur nefesh da'yachas takal. Right, try telling that. If you get drafted to the Israeli army, try saying, well, you know, it's a Sakanas Nefashos issue. So we understand that there are the Muhammad comes with Sakanas Nefashos by its very definition. So we can't allow that to be an exemption. It doesn't mean that Pikuach Nefesh doesn't dictate how we do things. It still does. But on an individual level, to say, well, this is too dangerous, clearly can't apply the same standard that you do to fasting on Yom Kippur. Right? So fasting on Yom Kippur will eat if there's any level of possible sakana, and clearly here we're going to have to at least use a very different kind of math for figuring out what exceeds the threshold. Now, what's also interesting is I think there might be another svara to think about that's in addition to what you said, that maybe there's something else. Why else might you say that it's a Yehud Valyabo here? I'm here.
Thinking maybe it could be that, you know, that Dananim are more emissaries of Hashem.
Okay.
Their role. Mm-hmm. So they're just carrying out this role. And God's saying, listen, if you just take care of what you have to do, then I will take care of you. So they're acting as kind of like a...
Uh-huh. Okay, I thought you were going somewhere else with that a second ago. That's a nice idea. But, no, it's a little bit like Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, so that's... Now that we have a source for that also, by the way, that it's interesting that the Gemara that talks about Lashanas Rafnei Hashalom tells us that Shmuel Hanavi, when he was asked by God to anoint David HaMalach king, and Shaul was still alive, and he was scared about getting killed. So God tells him a plan how he'll take care of him, which is an interesting parallel. But I thought you were going somewhere else with this, so this is just something that's interesting to think about, and I guess we'll have to leave you on this note today, and we'll have to pick up on this tomorrow, that you could say something else. You could say that because you're emissaries of God as a Dayan, so your psak has to be genuine, and to allow yourself to be intimidated into falsifying the truth, falsifying the psak, is something you're not allowed to do by its very nature. And this probably is evocative of the position of the Maharshal. It's a very often quoted Maharshal. I have to figure out whether it's really true the halacha or not, but the Maharshal in Bava Kamma is very often quoted as saying that Ziyuf HaTorah is Yehari Vayavra. That misrepresent the halacha in a way that changes the Torah, so to speak, is something you're not allowed to do, even on pain of death. So you could say here, right, that if din is Torah, so to misrepresent the din because you're afraid is something you're not allowed to do, even if you're afraid. So that might be something we have to consider. But I think it's very interesting if you think about Rashi here. Right, so Rashi just said, I don't know how much emphasis or meaning we have to put in the fact that he talks about switching the din. I think Rashi could be read a number of ways, basically, that this is the motive the guy's going after you. But it is interesting that he throws in those words, because those words maybe make a very significant difference. Why? What do you possibly see in those words? What if what Rashi is doing here is significantly changing the level of falsification we're talking about? Because until now, where does the Gemara talk about being mahafei chesedin? What does the Gemara talk about? Right, before that, what does our Gemara talk about? Our Gemara says, most of the Gemara age, don't change the din. What does our Gemara say? Don't run away. Right? Don't leave them hanging. So then, you might say, okay, listen, I'm not falsifying anything. I'm just not getting involved. Or I'm removing myself at a late stage. But Rashi's introducing a whole other concern. That maybe because of your intimidation, you'll flip the din. And you'll say that the guilty guy is innocent. So yeah, that's a big falsification of things. But that seems to be, you would think, much more severe than simply running away. Right, running away, we just associated it with Mizvar Sheker Techa, but really the other is associated with Mizvar Sheker Techa. So there, like we said, okay, that it could include a passive participation in letting the din come out wrong. But Rashi is really upping the ante here by saying that maybe you'll change the din. Seems to me that's a much more severe thing to do. Now, while all of these we should be able to say, and Deborah also to say, Pekuach Nefesh, but you could probably more hear it in Rashi's formulation, why maybe we could say, really, this is just something that's unacceptable. Right? You could probably imagine, even let's say in secular culture, let's say it came out that there was a judge who was issuing false verdicts, or who was somehow bringing judges of America don't issue the verdicts, but let's say whatever context they do. So a judge was issuing false verdicts, and it was a big scandal. And then it came out that he was doing it because his family was threatened. I think there'd be sympathy, but he would still probably face a lot of consequences. Right? There would be an assumption that being a judge means that you're willing to stand up for the law, and if you're going to change the law at a fundamental level, even because of tremendous life and death pressure, I think there would be quite a reaction to that, because the assumption that a judge is expected to rise above even that. So with that, let's leave it here. I apologize for this crazy schedule, and God willing, tomorrow we'll try to finish this and say a few more words, and bring ourselves closer to our Passover preparation. Wish everyone a wonderful day.